Vega. Mm-hmm. I think the first question to ask is there a problem with the quality of the reports so far, up to now? And maybe Chair can answer that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously the second leg is the follow-up. And that's where we can really discuss. Yes, in other words, if we give a recommendation and it's tabled in Parliament, what do we do in the following months or years to make sure that our recommendations are being followed through? The question again, and then once again, I apologise for this being a newcomer's question, is what is the status of our recommendations? Are they legal in nature? Are they, for instance, the whole argument about the public protector's recommendations, are they legal, are they not legal, are they quasi-judicial, what are they? And I think that will determine a lot in terms of how we follow them up. Because if they're just recommendations that can be ignored, if the parties wish to, then there's not really much we can do in terms of follow-up other than make a noise in the media, maybe. Which probably shouldn't come from our committee, but it would come from elsewhere. But the point is, you know, first of all, is there a quality issue? And then secondly, what are our powers in terms of our recommendations? What legal status do they have, if at all?
And I'm sure that members will see as we get into the work. It was more to say that the way we do our reports can never be static and standard. There has to be continuous improvement. Like I would say, for example, initially reports were there with recommendations and it ended there. Then we started to say, no, we need to add in the report that we need feedback in 60 days or 90 days after the report has been passed. Then we moved on to say, no, maybe we need quarterly reports as a way of ensuring that, well, that will deal with the follow-ups, but it talks to the content of the report. But also, if you check over the years, the reports from SCOPA did not suffer from a lot of grammatical improvement from the bureaucracy because of the thoroughness with which reports were processed to make sure that there's nothing ambiguous about the recommendations in the report, and also the grammar. It was usually an almost tedious process because we really went through everything and always had good former English teachers, I'm not sure this year, who really assisted with the... So it was more to say, we need to continuously seek ways to make sure that we produce high-quality work. Now, in terms of the follow-ups, it is an institution-wide problem. Be aware that once resolutions are passed by the House, it is now in the hands of the Speaker. But can we as a committee say we wash our hands of our report completely and say, well, the Speaker will see to finish, that's her responsibility? Certainly not. One of the things that we try to do, which we may need to do, is to continue to bang at the Speaker's office, which we did in the Fourth Parliament continuously, that create capacity in your office to track all resolutions passed in the House that have time frames, not only for SCOPA, but everything that ministers commit to before the House. How does the Speaker, and who promise, know there's something that would look like this, that will be able to check on everything. But I'm not sure where that was ultimately done. Secondly, we had tried to create capacity within SCOPA itself, that when our resolutions are passed, if we say, provide information in 60 days and the resolution is passed today, then Ben must be able to know that 60 days from today is the 21st of December, for example, and we're able then to check over time whether our timelines have been met or not, and for us to follow up and say, remember, in terms of what resolution, this is what we're expecting from you. I think that's where it's at. Now, in terms of what is the legal status, firstly, once our resolutions are only meaningful, and I'm sure the debacle on the SABC should be instructive, but for a decision to be taken in the committee and not processed in the House, it just remains talk out there from a legal point of view. So even ourselves, whatever we may discuss here, in terms of them being decisions of Parliament, they must have been passed by the House. Now, the separation of powers that we all like so much, unfortunately, implies that Parliament cannot instruct the executive, can't interfere in their work, and as much as they can't interfere in our work and they can't interfere with the judiciary, nor can we. So it means, therefore, that whatever views, whatever things we believe are correct to be done, are sent to the executive as recommendations. They may decide not to do exactly what we've said and do something else, but which then results in the same outcome as what we had prescribed ourselves. It's fine. So, I'm sure you see the element of cooperative governance. Otherwise, there is no law and there is nothing in the Constitution that says Parliament can enforce anything on the executive. So with that understanding, it means therefore that, and I'm sure that's where you come back to cooperation. How do you ensure that there is that understanding? But lastly, National Treasury has made it a disclosure requirement in the annual reports to have a scope of paragraph where a department or an entity must, under that paragraph, indicate whether there were scope of resolutions about them or not. If there are no resolutions, they must just write no resolutions, but they can't leave it out. It has to be there all the time. If there were, they must tabulate the recommendations and then indicate what they are doing to implement those resolutions. In that way, it is guaranteed that whatever recommendations we send cannot just be thrown out there, and you can then compare what they have said they are doing vis-a-vis what the Auditor General reports and whatever other information in the annual report is there vis-a-vis what they say they've done with our resolution.
I'm not sure if we are being consistent or what. You remember we had that debate the first weeks when we started with SCOPA, we had this debate. And I remember we had agreed in that meeting somewhere in 475 committee room that after there are resolutions that we'll take to the House, there's nothing stopping us as a committee to make sure that these things, the resolutions, are being implemented. Remember, we had a debate throughout the, and we agreed finally that that's how it's going to be like. So why are we changing now? I mean, I agree with the Honourable Member that, let me not go there, but why are we changing from that decision? What is the real problem? Can you take us through the real problem? Or maybe the practice that happened last term?
No, there's no change. Maybe I spoke to it in the context of history. Just to give context, but yes, that's why I was saying, can we say the resolution has been passed by the House, it's now the responsibility of the Speaker, and we must just pull back?
No,
we can't. Yes, but the reality is that decisions of the House are first and foremost the property of the Speaker's office. I'm just saying the fact that we're going to make follow-up should not absolve that office, because it has higher authority than we do. Not in relation to SCOPA, but generally all resolutions made by committees of Parliament.
Chair, maybe the only improvement that we can do from what the Chair is saying is to build a mechanism on the tracking of our resolutions. because that seems to be an element that is missing.
Chair, I think the last meeting you mentioned that I think National Treasury had required that scope resolutions be tracked.
I'm saying in the annual report there's a scope paragraph as a disclosure requirement that the department must indicate whether there was a scope resolution about them or not. If there was, then they must tabulate the recommendations and what they are doing about those recommendations.
So two clear things seem to be coming out is develop a mechanism. It's that developing a mechanism to track the resolutions, but I'd like us to be more active in the word. What exactly do you want to create? Because we could spend the next year developing a mechanism. So I need us to be more specific. What exactly are we going to do? What, how, when, by who? And also, part of that, also the evaluation of the way the resolution has been implemented needs to be then also be captured in this evaluation mechanism. So that's the one end. The other end that I'm unsure about is following up with the Speaker's office on those resolutions that haven't been tabled to the House for adoption, because departments are only really going to take them seriously, inverted commas, once they are adopted by the House. And see, I've got high expectations of National Scoper. It's a good thing that the chairperson of APEC is here. I don't do things for free. One of the difficulties I have faced currently is following through on the PAC resolutions, even in legislatures, where there are some legislatures where they've never been tabled and presented for adoption. And it's something that we need to take the lead in terms of creating the mechanism that we're talking about, because it's something that I think most legislatures will want to be able to take from us to implement elsewhere as the lead scoper. That's why I'm pushing us to be quite clear and prescriptive of what is it that we're going to do that's different, that we can measure. Because we can argue and say we have actually been following up on recommendations in some way or the other, because they're in the annual reports. What's the difference?
Well done. I reminded Tim earlier and then I forget myself. We tabled the report with the recommendations and then the House adopted that. And do we table actual specific resolutions that are separate from a report? Why I'm asking that is we could take a resolution today and then ask for it to be tabled in the House next week. Or do we go through a whole lot of annual reports and produce a report which contains recommendations, which then the whole report goes through. So I just need some guidance about how it actually works. But in terms of the follow-up, I would have thought, and again, I think it's already happening, I don't want to reinvent the wheel, but isn't there a monthly report that comes back to SCOPA, or a quarterly report, I heard the chair saying? Isn't that already happening, where these are the resolutions taken by the committee, these are the ones that have been passed in the House, these are the ones that have been acted on by the relevant department, these still have to go to the House, etc., etc. Each resolution with the tracking across a column for been to the House, a column for submitted to the department, a column for department action or something like that.
Yeah, I think we have developed that capacity or that template, including when the responses have come back, to give them back to the member who is responsible for to check whether the responses are actually adequate or not, because you can have responses that are not saying anything to what you have resolved upon. Oh, okay. Now, in terms of the earlier question, I think what we may need is on column 3, it's to say that we should be able to have all committee, all SCOPA resolutions and reports passed by the House. We must ensure that they are passed by the House. That is, after we have drafted, debated, and agreed upon them, they must not just go via the ATC. They must not just be ATC'd, and in the order paper, they always fall below the further business. Then in that way, it will ensure that, and I think if we had a challenge, once again, going into history, I think it's some, it's in terms of my experience, it's something that developed in the fourth parliament. Otherwise, in the third parliament, except for that oil gate report, we did not have any report that was not passed by the House. And just lastly, in terms of reports and resolutions, I think it's, and it's not scientific, I think resolutions usually refer to the reports of the committee on the annual report. But when there is a performance audit or an oversight visit, when we write the report, that is a report. I think that's the distinction.
With that clarity, members, I am still looking for an action. No, there is no tea.
Okay, but surely what we're saying is it's already there. So the action is what it is. So to ensure that regular reporting comes from whichever body is currently reporting, and just a matter of ensuring that, and I think effectively who would ensure that would be the Secretariat. Am I right? Yeah, so what I'm saying is, why don't we just put in there what the current practice is, unless we have something better to replace it with. If it's working at the moment, don't change it. If there's no mischief to remedy, leave it alone.
Okay.
And just enunciate it, just put out there. I don't know, the current Secretariat and then the Chair can tell us what the current system is.
The only thing, I take your point. See, I'm an auditor first, back in the day. They weren't sure what failure in an exam, because it doesn't say anything. That's why I'm being pedantic. And I know I'm being overly pedantic after lunch. Specifics. Because particularly the issue that's been raised, that there was a hiccup in the fourth parliament with the same activities being done. So how are we going to learn from the hiccup and go back to how it used to be that we could actually, where our resolutions were adopted or prioritized or whatever was the thing that changed. For me, that's the crispness I want us to have, is either we're saying on a quarterly basis we shall, IFCO members will receive, or on a quarterly basis the Secretariat will compile a report for or scope resolutions dashboard for members to see the resolutions that are passed, those that have that are still pending to be passed, and the status of those resolutions, just confirmation whether or not the departments have received those resolutions and what are they doing about them.
I think last part about after the resolutions have been passed, I think we have spoken to that. Mm-hmm. I thought you were stressing more about the before. And I think the bullet point there that has been added, I think it's appropriate. Because, you see, whether you pass or do not pass resolutions, it's not a mere administrative act. It's a political act. It's a political decision. Because you have a programming committee, you have the majority party decides what goes in and does not go in. So you can't have it any other way than the need to advocate. He says ensure is a low-key term. But how do you engage up to a mindset? I think like we had in the third parliament where there was still that thing that said SCOPA has some sort of special place. Whatever they do and whatever they have agreed upon, all of them must surely be right. And as parliament, we should always facilitate their work rather than the other way around. So it's something that we have to work on and ensure that, because it's not an administrative failure. You can't say there's an official there who must be knocked on the head for not processing these things. It's a political process.
Given that my members clearly outlined to me that they are all members from political parties in great detail, how are we going to measure each other on the advocacy? How, at the end of Q1, are we going to be able to measure our extent of advocacy?
I hope I'm not speaking out of term. I think that's very, very difficult to measure. Because what must I do? Issue a media statement? Must I make a member statement to the House? Will Honourable Gordy think that's good enough? Some of you really didn't try hard enough. You could have tried a bit harder, you know. How do we measure advocacy? I think that I'm entirely comfortable with what the chair has said. The point is we're a consensus committee. So we're going to sit here, we're going to discuss, we're going to come up hopefully with an agreement on a resolution to put forward to the House. It makes no sense that none of us, that any of us would then try and kibosh the thing. We would hopefully follow through unless we really speak with forked tongue. I would hope that this is a forum where we can express our opinions, you know, openly. So I think advocacy is right. But if we can just take one step back, that one step back, so I'm out of order, but just that developer, I know developers, you didn't like the word, developer mechanism to track them in the same block, Sianda. I'm just thinking you could just change that to secretariat to ensure that committee resolutions are tracked through the House and through to departments, something like that. That takes out your developer and it just basically gives the job to the secretariat to make sure that that's done. But yeah, I can't see how you can measure advocacy. Just going back there.
And I think that's, for me, is the key thing.
Chair, maybe the other mechanism that we can look at is we do have a management committee. Mm-hmm. And I think the management committee must, maybe on a quarterly basis, that is, pick up all those issues and bring them back, that is, to us here, so that we can be in a position to take stock, that is, of all the resolutions.
Mm-hmm. And how often are the management meetings?
Sorry?
I was suggesting it, that is on a quarterly basis, because I'm not sure how often do they meet.
No,
they meet every week.
Well, I'd recommend, I think, on a quarterly basis. Again, I'm sneaking in things now. On a quarterly basis, all the committees sit and evaluate internal controls of a department. On a quarterly basis, the AGSA does a key control assessment. One of the areas where we can now look at tracking is being able to include these resolutions as part of those key control assessments or the things that the audit committee is tracking. But that will require us to build a relationship with the various audit committees to be able to, for them to track it so that on a quarterly basis they're able to provide us feedback on the credibility of the responses to those resolutions. Honourable Member?
I'm just thinking on my head. I think one tool that we can use to make this effective is to include what you are saying now, and I mean, to the Rules Committee. We have different parties here, and there's Rules Committee where we, because I think all the committees in Parliament have a problem with this, not only SCOPA. I think if we lobby this to our different political parties, we'll end up having this session in the rules, within the rules of Parliament. Maybe a recommendation to the Rules Committee.
Can I make a suggestion that I hear what the comrade is saying, but I think for ourselves, what do we want to achieve now? I think if advocate for SCOPA resolutions to be adopted by the House at least 2 weeks after there have been 80 seats, right? So a resolution is put on the 80 seat, must be there for at least how many days? 3 days?
Yeah.
3 days. And then after that, but like she's saying, it, whilst we say for ourselves, SCOPA, but we know that is what other committees may be wishing for. And it might be something when we're in the committee of chairpersons, is it something that one can raise so we have an agreement or there's a push in that particular direction so that when the program committee meets, they know at least once every 2 weeks we must have a sitting where committee resolutions are adopted by the House, because you can pass a resolution now in, say, in February, and the House only adopts it in July. I mean, the time span, it renders that oversight almost meaningless. But so I was saying, we put a target for ourselves, whether we meet it or not, but at least we have a reference point for ourselves to struggle towards.
Yeah, okay. And I suppose we'll get feedback on this on a quarterly basis for the rest of COPA. Is that...
So we're happy now? Yeah.
Not
something
we
invent in that. No. Just to add, I think at the end of the day we need to know and understand that we are the custodians of these resolutions. We own this. And that's why we need to, as a committee and our secretariat, be on target, tracking it regularly, whether it's on a monthly basis or so, in with our reports that we get and with our meetings that is scheduled. And we've had them numbered so that we ensure that every resolution has been taken care of. We need to follow it. We need to track it all the time, regularly, to make sure it's done. But like the Chair Honourable Chairperson says, time frame is very, very important, because no point in sending in resolution that sit there for 6 months and 9 months and a year, or the term has passed and there's a new team here. You know, that's the problem.
I think the only thing that's missing, they're taking into account all the comments. I think it's a particular engagement with Chair of Chairs, is making sure that this is a standing, is SCOPA lobbying to have SCOPA resolution tracking as a standing item on the agenda of Chair of Chairs. And it's something that we can make some our own desire of saying, how do we get that to become a standing? Because as you say, rightly point out, if all the other chairpersons struggle with the same thing, we shouldn't, but that way it also holds, it gets the House Chairperson to really support this act of kind of tracking this resolution. I still don't like the first one, that ensure, but we'll go and work with it. But that first split makes no sense. Okay, then, second bullet of the core objective, we just have done one, is enhance the coordination and effectiveness of oversight visits. If I can recommend, I think there also needs to be, this is one of those things, there needs to be alignment in programming between
you know, committees. So I don't know how the alignment of the programming happens, but somehow we need to figure out what are the alignment of the programs. If we can, as an activity, a scoper, ensure that, one, we plan as ahead as we possibly can, so that we are able to slot in, the other people are able to see what it is that we are doing, so they can also come with us as the super team. But this is where you will have to then refine it on saying, how do you want to get enhanced their coordination and effectiveness? Because I think it is useful. I think the last meeting we agreed it was useful, but we needed it to be coordinated. I think the Limpopo visit or a visit was highlighted quite a lot, that we ended up with two committees going to the same place with different, you know, and it did not have the desired impact that we wanted to have.
My suggestion, honorable members, is that if you look at bullet 2 and 3, I think in the previous discussions we are of the view that those are issues that needs to be elevated to the House Chairperson. I'm suggesting, therefore, that in the bullet that I've just written now, lobbying the NA House Chairperson, maybe we should rather be saying lobbying the NA House Chairperson on matters relating to coordination of oversight, cooperation between committees and tracking, so that it becomes just one action that encompasses all the other issues there, unless maybe you feel that they need to be separated.
Happy, members? And how...
I agree with that, but the other issue that I think we need to do, maybe our research team should also assist us, that before we even go out on oversight, we need to know that is exactly what is the objective, what is it that we want to achieve that is with that, because we need to go out there and ask relevant questions.
Research team, are you not doing that already?
We do. Before the committee goes on oversight, I prepare a document on what the issues are in that department. So the members have information even before they go there. I even include questions, relevant questions to ask that department. But now coming back to the point that you mentioned, I think just to add, we can add the implementation of resolutions, because I think that has been an outstanding issue. It has been a burning issue for the committee for quite some time, that even though resolutions get passed by the House, but implementation of those resolutions by the executive remains a challenge.
Okay. So you need to update the first bullet. Okay.
That Comrade Kekane made, I thought we'll make that a bullet point, not because it is new, but to ensure that our oversight visits are effective, we need proper planning and research. Prior to going. So that when we go there, it's not just we're not just touring. I think that on its own as a standalone.
The one thing that I as part of this coordination, and I'm saying this again just to kind of share what we've been.
I'm not sure if what I'm struggling with is effects of after lunch. But before we get to Honorable Kekana, for me it's a step B. The A is, if we want to enhance the effectiveness of our oversight, what informs that oversight? Like, we deal with so many departments, so how do we come to say we are going to labor? Before we come to his point, how is that decision made? That's what I'm struggling with, because I think somewhere we need to have a mechanism that is scientific that informs it.
I think that's a very, very good point, and I think it goes into a consider all annual reports. So it could be a question of formatting, of saying, do we start with consider all annual reports as a core objective, move to enhancing the effectiveness of SCOPA, oversight by SCOPA, then end with improving the understanding of the public. Because then you start getting the logical flow in your mind that says, this is how we then, we considered, this is how we prioritize, it's a research base, we then sat with them, then we got resolutions, then this is now why we're lobbying the chair and the chair of chairs and this person and the other. And at the end is, we also want to make sure the public understands why we are doing the things that we are doing. Does that make sense? So I think we just need to, but we'll do that after so that we don't waste a lot of time. But I think that logic will do, because I think it's very important to read it correctly. Thank you so much for raising it.
Just in passing, to say, it's not just a one-way street. If I can take what we did in the last year or two, you find that the decision to make an oversight visit arises out of the hearing that you have with the department. You realize you must go and have a look. Compensation fund, for example. You want to go and have a look at the mess that is there.
The thing that I do want us to think about quite actively, and it's an area that we've encouraged audit committees to do as well, is engagement with audit committees for you to have better insight in terms of the outcomes of internal audit reports, because they may not be something that they can share with you, but if they can give you the risks and the emerging issues that are emerging so that you are able to understand as part of the understanding of that entity. And it becomes important that we structure that coordination properly so that it happens timeously before the engagement with an actual department to allow that robust questioning. It hasn't come through in the activities that we want to do in whether we're going to improve our relationship with, I think it's a standard that we are there as AGSA, but I think for me it becomes more important to really look at those other assurance providers that exist. But this is where I throw the ball back into members' courts.
I think what we've done, whether that is adequate or not, I think it's for us to decide. We have, I think, towards the end of the fourth parliament, decided that whenever we have hearings, the chairperson of the audit committee should attend. Because before the hearing, we meet with the auditor general to give us a briefing. And I must say that in almost 99% of the cases, that has been very, very helpful, because you get a sense that the audit committee chairperson has been given an outlet to actually talk more to the challenges of internal control. So I'm not sure whether I would want to do something different in relation to that or not, but so far I think that it has worked well. It's something that was not there, but it was part of trying to say, how do we ensure that we bring almost everybody on board.
I think members, given that a lot, some of the members are new, my suggestion is putting it on the plan so that all members are consistently aware that this is what we are doing. So it's not something new, but it's continuing with the practice. So it's probably just as part of the activities, it's continuing the practice of ensuring that we do pre-briefings with audit committees, etc., to get insights. Then the third bullet was around improving cooperation with other oversight committees, but we've already included it as part of the lobbying. Then the last one was ensure the cooperation of the executive and accounting officers with SCOPA. That's what she said. You see the drum of Inshona. So they said, in short, now what are the activities that are going to underpin? Okay, so how do we capture this concisely? It's timely notification of accounting officers and executive members of the SCOPA hearing and the content of what it is that we want them to provide information on. So that's the one activity.
So just a step back, honorable members. I'm not sure, maybe Chair can help me. I'm not sure whether we've had problems in this regard of accounting officers not appearing in the committee. Somehow, I'm beginning to have doubts in terms of what do we want to do there. Do we want to ensure something that we know that is happening as a matter of course? Do we want to enhance it? What do we want to do? I'm trying to find a leading verb there that will tell us what do we want to do. Because in my 5 years of being in the committee, I haven't seen any challenges of accounting officers not coming to the committee. Hence, I'm trying to see, what are we trying to say here?
That is Marbury, right? Well, I would disagree. The word ensure is completely inoffensive. It's just making sure it happens. If you make sure it happens by way of a friendly invite, great. If you make sure it happens by way of legislation, great. Just ensure that it happens. So, as my colleague said, it's the timeliest notification of relevant parties to appear before SCOPA. I thought we'd just leave it at that, because you've really got it in the ensure.
The one thing that you want to raise that we need to think about is you want to create a relationship with, yes, they appear, but they also want to give you information on progress without needing to come and appear on a regular basis, without them saying to you, it's in our annual report, you'll get it in a year. Which is the other risk. So we need to find a way, because I think for me that's what cooperation really is trying to get to, is being able to track it throughout the year so that it is not almost thrown as you will see it when we give you the next annual report, which is too late in my mind. So I think probably in the activities that we are crafting, if we are saying the risk is not about attending all the time, and if of accounting officer, let's separate between accounting officer attendance and an executive authority attendance. What is it that we are most worried about? Is it the executive authority that's not attending that we want there, or is it the accounting officer? Are they not cooperating with us in terms of giving us regular feedback on our resolutions? What is the challenge?
Can I just come in? I'm a little bit concerned here, because my colleague across is clearly saying there are no challenges in terms of those things. So what's the purpose of that? Why are we addressing something that's a no-no already? There's no problem, there's no issues there. That's an accepted fact that when you invite the audit committee, they come. You invite the AG, they come. You're inviting these people, they're coming. So it's a practice that has been taking place for all these years, the last 10, 15, 20 years it's been happening. So, I thought maybe what we want to do is try and improve on what we've had because of some challenges that we've been faced. But yeah, it seems we are overrunning, the same things, the things that are already happening, and we want to, I don't know what we want to actually implement there. In fact, my concern is that, which I think would be a more serious concern for me, is even when we talk about the reports, before we even, I don't see, and the emphasis for me should be on the real investigation, the interrogation, and all those things, before we even go and talk about resolutions. That's what would be more important for me, to go through all those exercises before we go through. But my understanding is, from what I hear, that all these things have been happening. There are some challenges in terms of resolutions not being implemented, and we know that now those are issues we should be taking on how do we address those that you, because otherwise the entire exercise is futile, because you're going through the whole process, resolutions are going there, not being implemented, no consequences for non-compliance, there are the problems. So those are things I would feel with, but otherwise going again and again on the same things that has been done already for the last couple of years, I think we going one step forward and two steps backward. I don't know if we could just maybe...
Remember? Okay, I've got to come back to the word insure. The insure I was inserted about 2 hours ago, okay, and everybody agreed at that point, was simply because it was how do we measure ourselves, okay? So if we insure, it means that we will use whatever mechanism necessary to get them to come. First step is a nice invite. Second step, if we have to, is possibly by subpoena. But basically makes it measurable for us. That's all it is. But this does raise another issue that is interesting. The accounting officer is supposed to be there, am I correct? Mm-hmm. What about the minister or the deputy minister? Mm-hmm. Is that the executive? Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's something that a lot of us would have a great interest in, is that the executive must be there at those hearings. And I think that, can you elucidate? Is it, do we run into challenges there? In terms of having the minister and the deputy minister or one of the other, do we run into problems with the executive? Because that might be something in terms of an activity.
I don't remember. I think it's a terrain largely for members. I'm not very clever in terms of that one. But my little understanding, at least from the side of being working from an audit institution, is that, remember, honorable members, the person who's in head of administration, who's supposed to provide stewardship over the finances of the department, is the accounting officer. That's why my colleague and I were trying to also talk about the fact that you need to look at that section of the PFMA that says what is the accounting officer supposed to do, because part of our interrogation should not be to look at the report coldly to say here's the finding A, B, and C, but we ought to go further to say, given these particular findings that you see from the Auditor General's report, who is supposed to have been looking after all the mess, if I were to call it the mess? That's why we think that somehow maybe in the course of our interaction as well, we ought to drill a bit deeper in terms of what that section of the PFMA is saying about the role of the accounting officer. Yes, honorable members, politically, the minister has to have an overview, but honestly speaking, in terms of the day-to-day understanding of what goes on in the kitchen of a department, he wouldn't be able to give that. But that's why I'm saying, members, I'm very being cautious in terms of saying that's my accounting understanding. However, the terrain around the political accountability is a matter that surely is not outside our own understanding.
Now, Chair, I think the guidance is correct, because we need to have a recourse if somebody is maybe not doing anything.
Mm.
And what you've just indicated is the recourse would be the PFMA.
Mm.
Now, if we are to invite the minister and he or she decides not to come, what recourse do we have?
Yeah.
I mean, and you clearly indicated to us that the person who is responsible in the department or who is accountable is the accounting officer.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to deal with somebody who is accountable.
Yeah.
So that at least if there is a problem, we can apply other that is mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Just to indicate that the issue around enhancing the cooperation of the executive and the accounting officers with the committee arises from the core objective of enhancing the effectiveness of our oversight. Surely, our oversight can't be effective without the cooperation of the accounting officer and the executive. Now, the last point that Mr. Saki was talking to, I think in the third parliament, whenever we had hearings, ministers did not come. But that was changed in the fourth parliament. We requested, we insisted, it was debated, until it was accepted that it is correct and right that ministers should accompany their departments. Because in the PFMA, there are also responsibilities of the minister. Does not end with the accounting officer. There are responsibilities of the executive authority in relation to how things will be done. But the Constitution talks about accountability
to Parliament by Cabinet, and Cabinet is political. And we've had this debate and discussions, and we asked National Treasurer, does the PFMA say that we can only talk to the officials? And if they still remember the response, they said no, does not mean that. Accountability cannot be delegated. So there is political accountability and responsibility, because when things go wrong in the department, who is ultimately responsible? It is the political head. But at a practical level, ministers have actually been very happy, because coming before SCOPA has actually helped them to understand things even better. You find that they're actually being misled by the officials in terms of what is actually happening. So that exercise has been very, very helpful to them in getting a better sense and actually understanding which areas need to be focused on to get things right. So yes, when you have a hearing, you're not going to ask a minister why was there an irregular expenditure of 4 million. Surely a minister cannot answer to that. It is the officials who do the day-to-day running. And that's why when we have hearings, at the end of the hearing, we do allow the minister to say, well, you have been listening. Is there anything you can say, having listened to everything? But if you have ministers like Mzwaledi, he answers better than his officials on those very details, showing you a person who is actually in charge, not aloof from the processes. So I'm just saying that the issue of the ministers being involved, it's more in ensuring that at a political level there is accountability, but also to ensure that the officials, knowing that their political heads are there, will be able to give us the kind of information that that is required. So for me, that enhancing, it's not because there's a problem, but you enhance cooperation to ensure that our oversight is effective. Because if you don't have that cooperation, our oversight can't be effective. So it's not a problem, but it's an enabler for that core objective.
Yeah, I hear what is being said, but I don't know if we want to have enhanced as a core objective and then have it also enhanced.
Yeah.
So if it is already ongoing, why don't we rather say maintain the cooperation by doing this and this, because it is already there?
Sure. I think that's fine.
Just one thing, Honourable Members, on this particular one, if then we take a position that we would like the executive authority to be present as well, a very smaller detail. Our hearings tend to be on Wednesdays. Those are the days when Cabinet meets. I'm trying to call for a very... This has to go to those finer details for us not to be seen to be failures when we have to evaluate this particular decision in a later stage. I'm saying, therefore, we ought to find ways in which we reorganize our meetings to make it easy for ministers to attend. I'm trying to put it into the finer details of this for it to be more practical.
That's where some of the words like improve, because they need to do a step change of saying, we know they've had coordination, we recognize where the gaps may have been in the past, and maybe there's been a clash of diaries. If you want to improve this, how are we going to do it? And then it's almost in aligning our programming so that it's that timely notification that allows the minister to plan appropriately. Remember?
I think I agree with what he's giving us. You know, he's being practical, and we can't stifle our hearings because the minister is not there, because the minister has to go somewhere or is in a cabinet meeting. I think the key person who's supposed to be there when we're doing our public hearings is the accounting officer, because the accounting officer is the one whose signature is whenever he has to approve a budget or disapprove or whatever. It's not the minister. If the minister wants to come, we can write an invitation to both of them, but the main person who's supposed to be there should be the accounting officer. That's the main person. Yes, if we need a political response, we know exactly, that will be different. We know we are writing to a particular minister, but all the accounting officers should be present, and it has been there forever. But I think if we leave it, then it will mean that what if we have a problem? Because whatever that we write into, there should be a legacy for the 6th Parliament. Thanks.
I think we are going back and forth, because I think the chairperson articulated very well the issue of the PFMA, and he did say that it is not only limited to the DG. And I don't know, I guess we are here and we have experienced different things with governance in South Africa. I don't hold the view that DGs are evil and ministers are holy. Because sometimes it's the minister that is the villain, and that DG is just suffering, struggling to exist in that department. So I think for me, I go with what the chairperson said. It is critical to get both here. And I'm not sure if we can have a clinical tool where we separate the finances from the political. The two go together. So I think the two, I then go back to the caution that was raised that we hold the hearings on Wednesday. I think from what the chairperson has said and from his suggestion, I thought what we are taking forward now is how do we then ensure that, your favorite word, how do we then ensure that the ministers are here? Are we changing Wednesday? I thought that's the discussion that we need to take forward, not whether the ministers should be here or not.
I think we've kind of reached that point. And we've reached that point, and I think what's going to happen, I think we need to get to that activity of saying, how do we adjust ourselves to accommodate? And that's why I keep saying it's a timely notification, it's adjusting what's the activity that we want to do that shows our intent of improving or ensuring that cooperation.
I would agree with you. Timely notification, as Honourable Lee said, timely notification of all parties to attend hearings. I don't think you necessarily need to move from the Wednesday, because if you have a cabinet meeting, you're not going to have all the ministers in one hearing on the same day. So it's quite common to excuse yourself from a meeting and say, look, I can't make that one or whatever. And so unless that minister will tell us, look, I cannot be there on that day, I'll send my deputy or whatever the case may be. I don't think you need to change the date as a go case by case. But timely notification of all hearings. The question is, what is timely? Should we put a notice period in? Should we say 30 days? 14 days?
You should put a time period on what timely means. So what does timely mean to yourself?
Sorry.
Maybe just to check.
I've just got a different comment there. My concern is this, that if we want cooperation and we want to succeed in what we're doing, we already know cabinet ministers are not available on a Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be calling them regularly. We want them to come here. Mm-hmm. So what are we doing? We are setting ourselves for failure.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to pitch up here to come and respond.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't we rather, because all they're going to do is say, you guys ought to have known that we're not available on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
So why should we not rather choose an alternate day like a Thursday or some other day?
Yeah.
So that we know at least we're going to get them here. Otherwise, otherwise we should remove the issue of cabinet ministers and things out of this, because they're not going to pitch up. And I do agree.
I think we need to run out of time.
Oh, okay. I think my concern is similar to what the honourable member is saying. Are we by implication saying if the minister is not available, we are not going to have a hearing? Because there is that possibility. Hence, I still hold a strong view that the person who is accountable in the department is the accounting officer. But if we are going to suggest that the minister should be there, whether we like it or not, there is a possibility that we might not even have, that is, these hearings.
I think, members, we are getting to a territory that I think as members One, I think in terms of you when you schedule your meetings, I'm not so sure if it goes into your strat plan in whether or not you adjust your meetings. That's for one. Secondly, I think the issue of on that occasion where you've notified a minister and they are unable to make it and you do not without and they've given you a reason why and you're unhappy about the reason, it is also a decision you have to make whether or not you want to continue with the hearing or not. I think it isn't something that we can structure into a strat plan. I think it has to do with circumstance at the time, what you are looking at the time, what are the tensions at the time that you are trying, what are the issues at the time that you are trying to address, and whether those issues need the minister directly or they can wait or et cetera, et cetera. I think that's something that has to be evaluated on the matter at hand.
So
that's my assessment of it.
Sorry, I have a problem with that. I have a very serious problem with that because what we are basically saying is, first of all, as much as the accounting officers are responsible, the ministers are the head. Ministers must also take responsibility. They need to also come and account because at the end of the day, it's their department. They're the heads of those departments. What you're really doing here is pushing the buck onto just the accounting officer, and the ministers will now be left on side. Because no minister is going to pitch up on a Wednesday, he's not going to be able to do it. We are saying we want the ministers. We want them to also be accountable. We want them to know what is going on there. We want to hear from them. Now, I don't know why we want to go in the same direction when we know we're not going to get them at all, but at the same time we're saying it's important that the ministers pitch up, so they're not going to come. I would personally suggest that we need to look at it, and especially that, in fact, that we're going to continuously be calling ministers of different departments, and it's not going to happen on a Wednesday, then we should try to accommodate that because we already know they've got a program on Wednesdays. You understand?
I think we're on the same page. I think what I was highlighting is, I think that is a known statement. It's something that as...
I mean, the whole of the fourth parliament, we called ministers on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. We're not starting something new. And I don't think that we had a crisis of immeasurable proportions about ministers coming. From time to time, you'll have a minister who might not come because maybe he's out of the country, or there's a cabinet meeting, the deputy minister would come, or whatever. You would never have 100% kind of attendance, but I don't think that we had a crisis. So I don't think that, unless if we consciously discuss it as, let's review. But from my experience, no, we didn't have a crisis.
That, I think, for me, becomes the important thing for here. Because even when you're discussing the time period and the date, they will be able to tell you whether or not they can't make that date, and then you would have to make that call as a committee of saying, no, we are either going to adjust the day later or keep the same day or whatever the case. I think that's something that we can't script. That's what I was saying. Not that we are excluding it. I very much acknowledge that ministers need to be there. It's just saying we can't script it here. Please.
The only problem I respect what the Honorable Chair is saying. I just see a contradiction because my argument was based on what my colleague said, that ministers are not available on a Wednesday. But if the Honorable Chairperson, who's been there for many years, says that he's never had a challenge there, then that's a different issue. Then we don't have a problem.
Put this to bed. Our key objective is to maintain the cooperation of the executive and the accounting officer. So there's no argument here. The PFM. The issue is, we want you to come here. We give you 30 days notice.
Yeah.
You can't make that date. Okay, let's make it the Tuesday or the Thursday or whatever.
Okay.
Let's fit you in. And I think the secretariat should do that.
Yeah.
In consultation with the chair.
Okay.
It's just a scheduling issue. That's all it is.
Are we happy with the 30-day notification, members? 30-day. Is that what we agreed on? I'm taking your word. 13 or 14 days. Chairperson, what?
I'm saying, look, in terms of informing officials and ministers, we have not had any crisis.
And if ministers are not available, or even teachers are not available, they write back and say, can we have another day? And so the flexibility is always built in whatever we do. You don't say it's Wednesday or nothing. I mean, it doesn't work that way.
I think, Chairperson, what we're trying to get to is a discipline for ourselves, not necessarily for the external. For ourselves, at minimum, either we say we want to make sure they have a 14-working day structure, so they have notification. For me, it's about structure. You know, if we can do a 14-day notification, they can still. We are still flexible, to understand, but we know, as a discipline from SCOPA, we are not going to summon somebody tomorrow. That's all I'm trying to get us to do, because if we're maintaining the cooperation, we are saying we recognize time constraints in different people's diaries, so we'll give them notification. That's really all that we are trying to do, not say there's problems. There's no problems.
That sounds very
I'll put from an AG perspective, and I'm going to be quite blunt, which is always going to get me in trouble. It is difficult being told SCOPA needs to see you next Tuesday. My diary is planned a month in advance, for the most part. So, I don't think I'm as busy as a general, you know, as most executives, as probably as ministers, etc., to travel. But there's a lot of things that get put in. So for me, it's just the structure of being able to say, I know SCOPA has planned, I prioritize SCOPA, but they've given me some leeway so that if I move things out of my diary, I'm still moving them knowing, and I'm not giving the other things that were sitting there a two-day notification. Let's say, for example, I have EXCO next week Wednesday. I'm making up days. If I get notification on Friday to come to SCOPA on Wednesday, it doesn't give me enough time to then tell the person that I'm the chairperson that I will not be making the meeting. For me, it's just a discipline where people understand we take them seriously. And it's not anything, but we can remove it if we don't want. Then the question is, and then it goes back to the question of saying, what is the activity that we want to do to support, to maintain the cooperation?
I don't know. I hear you and I understand you, but then I have been in the military for 21 years, so structure is not foreign to me. So we are going to give the Minister of Health 2 days to appear before SCOPA, and then we will give the Minister of Sports and Culture 30 days to appear before SCOPA, and another one 14 days. So if I'm the minister that was given 2 days and I don't want to come here, I'll say I'm sorry. You gave the other one a month, so are you gunning at me? Why are you giving me only 2 days? I don't know where it heads for us to arrive at a structure or a format that says it's 14 days or it's 21 days. For me, that does not head at all, and it does not mean that we are walking on eggs or creating problems. No, we are actually not creating problems because we are coming with a one-size-fits-all. 21 days, if you have issues, write back to us, and then we can negotiate. Or 30 days, if you can't write back to us, then we will renegotiate. But how does... How does it affect?
It depends on the committee. Sometimes we sit in the meeting, then we realize that we need to call the department within 2 weeks. So we usually twist. If the minister is not available, the deputy minister is available, will be definitely be available for that.
Thanks, Chair. We would also want to be cautious, and I'm not sure we should put it in black and white, because if there are issues within a department and the ministry feels that, or I think that there are problems there, so we don't want a situation where they run to the strat plan, however they get hold of it and say, oh no, but no, you've got it in black and white, you gave me 13 or 12 days and want to be technical about it, so that's not enough time. So I'm not sure if we can get to a situation where we can make it an internal arrangement, rather than have it in black and white.
Okay.
Thanks again for indulging me. Yeah, there is. I like English. It's a rich language, so it's foreign. So you don't say 21 days. You say at least.
I'm not a foreigner.
21 days. How does that accommodate the age? You said you got a 30-day diary.
No. I just think, for me, it was a principle. It's a principle of being able to give somebody notice, particularly if you want an adequate submission and response, because that takes that preparation.
No, I'm satisfied because I think I heard you saying that we are a superpower, so you'll accommodate us.
Once again, it's a stretch target. But I can always work out.
It's fine.
Cool.
I think we've done the second one. The last one, which I pray will go quickly, is the last objective, which was annual report. Let me move closer. Consider all annual reports that are tabled. Activities, we had set the strategic objectives to conduct effective research, the outcomes of all departments, prioritize departments in negative oral outcomes for hearing, and develop resolutions on departments in negative oral outcomes.
Yeah, I think the last bullet point, my understanding is that we will make resolutions on all the reports, and especially including those that are unqualified and have no issues, so that we don't only condemn people when they do wrong, but we don't acknowledge when they've done right. So it cannot... Our resolutions cannot only be limited to those with negative outcomes. I think that's the first point before we go to measurable activities. I would venture to say that maybe we need to agree that subsequent to the submission of reports, which is always the end of September, all categorization or all the preliminary consideration of reports must be done in the fourth quarter of the year, meaning when we go on recess end of November, we must have processed all the reports. That is, those that are fine, we must have done them. Those where we need questions, they must have been done. We must only be left with those that we need to have hearings on, so that when we come back in January, we are not yet discussing, is this report for a hearing or is it not for a hearing? In that way, we have a time frame within which we consider all the reports and decide what we want to do with them. In terms of having gone through all your reports and having made a recommendation to the group on what needs to happen.
But Chair, who does the categorization?
Yeah, isn't it each one of us has been allocated a number of reports? What we're saying is that each one of us must have gone through the lot that you have been given and reported to the group that in terms of what you have given me, this is what I think. So that when we come back in January, that process, we must go on recess having completed it. And what we should be left with should, one, be the actual writing of the resolutions for those that have clean audits, and secondly, the writing of the standard resolution plus questions for those that want to have questions, and be clear of the departments and entities that want to have hearings on.
Now I hear what you're saying. The only problem that I have is the practicality
for this year.
I think what I'm saying is I'm dealing with arts and culture, and it is close to 30 entities plus the department. What it means is that between now and when you go on recess, I must have processed those reports.
Before you did the study check.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe if we start the year together, like next year, we can go to that mode. I'm not sure if that's going to be practical this year, especially for people who sit in two committees that are hectic like me. So I'm not sure, but members can talk. Maybe they have 27 hours in a day. I don't have that luxury.
I think for me, isn't it, this is a straight plan for 5 years.
Yeah.
So put that as
no, that's what I'm saying. That
yeah. And the next year we'll check, did we achieve that or not?
Mm.
Was it 40% or 80%?
Mm.
And then, fine, if we did 60%, can we take it up to 75% the following year? Until we've got into the rhythm of doing it. But because maybe it will be different, but you'll realize when we come back in January how the year quickly runs and how much limited time we have, even for all the hearings that we'd want to have. So that's why we always need to go the extra mile, otherwise we'll just be overwhelmed by work, unfortunately. Yeah.
If we finish the resolutions now and we deal with them next year, we have forgotten them. We have gone.
We'll put a month to do that.
Clarity on one point. Is it also the mandate of SCOPA to look into the unqualified ones and things as well, or is it just those with
all of them?
Okay.
Change of our range is the prickly subject I'd like to raise, Chair. Absolutely. Because it's talking about a schedule. We've had a couple of meetings where just 1 week to the next, that things have been cancelled. And I think if we're talking about getting our reporting done, getting our hearings done within certain time frames, we can't just have the committee closed down for a week because unfortunately you may be away or whatever. We need to have a contingency plan that if, for instance, all the members need to be at BRRR meetings, understandable, we need to have a contingency plan so we don't lose weeks, because we have on a couple of occasions lost a couple of weeks, which, if what you're saying is correct, is valuable time. What is our contingency to make sure that we're not wasting time so that we can achieve these objectives?
Well, comrades, I said that part of the challenge we'll have will be the program of Parliament, which is outside our control. What we need to do ourselves is to say, this is what we want to achieve. Now, the reality of when we are now going around our work is what is going to determine whether we succeed or we don't succeed. Look, we had wanted to do this today and tomorrow outside Parliament, but we're told tomorrow can't do, so we had to cut it. So I think it's those kind of things.
Which is very unfair for you to cut in the
middle. No, sure.
Labour is not here as we talk. They are somewhere in the Golan.
Yeah, well, all right. Yeah.
All right.
This is the vote.